We'll talk this hour about what this week's recall election results mean for the future of labor unions, not only in Wisconsin, but nationwide. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, June 8th. Organized labor groups were among those who wanted to recall Governor Walker, but ended up on the losing end of that equation. Has the governor now completely defeated the public unions? Will other states follow suit? Are private unions at risk? Do you think that this is a good or a bad thing? We'll welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Frank Emspach. He is managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So I'm looking at an AP story headline following the election, and the headline is Nation's Unions Lost Big in the Wisconsin Showdown. Do you agree or not?
Well, it certainly wasn't a victory. I don't know, lost big. Clearly it wasn't a good thing. If Barron had been recalled and unions were credited with most of the work, clearly it would have been a really big boost for unions and an example of the union's ability to mobilize. But I think we need to understand that in the recall election, unions were one part of what really amounted to a three-way coalition, and a very important part and a very energetic part, but not the only part.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you think Governor Walker was reelected and not removed from office by a rather big margin?
I think there are three reasons for that. First of all, earlier in the newscast, the headline, there is a substantial number of Wisconsin voters who believe that the recall was used improperly or shouldn't be used at all for these types of political discussions. I have felt coming into this election that group of people would not vote. But I think what they did is they came out and voted for Governor Walker. Secondly, I think that Governor Walker, through, I would say, 10 or 11 months of a rather astute campaign, accomplished two things. He did divide and conquer, and I think the 39% or 38% of people who identified as coming from union or union households who voted for Walker are an example of that. But he also was able to convince, I think, against reality, that he was a job creator and had a plan for that. And I think a lot of people who were originally negative on that issue attracted positive by the beginning of May. And I think, finally, the Republicans had a ground game, which I think opponents did not really recognize at the time. So between the astute and 11-month media campaign, a successful divide and conquer and propaganda campaign, and a pretty substantial motivational campaign, it worked for him.
Yeah. So when you say that the divide and conquer aspect worked for him, and noted that more than a third of those who voted for Governor Walker were from union households, this means that he successfully convinced private union members that the public unions were overpaid and underworked, or what?
Well, I don't know. The polling and our indicate. I don't have the kind of information that would say this type of person voted that way. I think what he succeeded in doing with that 38 or 39%. Would say to people, whoever, whether it was public service people, public sector people or not, that their taxes were being used to support somebody else and not them. And that kind of sort of selfish thing. I also think, though, that at the other side of the spectrum, Mayor Barrett was not very clear on what his job creation strategy might be. To just say we're going to restore what we had, I think was not enough. And I say that, and this is also a criticism of Governor Walker, we've had these major closures of paper mills throughout northern Wisconsin, and neither person really spoke directly to that. in a real way. And so the fact that Governor Walker was able to convince people we're a job creator when we've had these massive losses, that says something for propaganda and media. But I think Mayor Barrett would have been well served also if he'd come out and said, look, we have this employment crisis here. It isn't going to be solved by tax cuts. Here is my plan to try to deal with what's happening throughout northern Wisconsin. Here is my plan to improve the environment so we can create more jobs for, you know, that are dependent on tourism and so forth. And I didn't hear much of that, and I think his campaign would have been well served by doing it.
So are public employee unions dead?
No, I don't think so. I thought that AP thing was sort of overblown. The first question is, do people want and need and desire representation at the workplace? And is it a good thing? I come down, obviously, on the notion that it's a good thing. And the most prosperous countries in the world have had and continue to have strong trade union movements. And I don't think there's democracy in the workplace issues. There's work efficiency issues. If you're working with somebody, you should get something done better. But in any event, the fact that this particular method that we do with things in Wisconsin is under attack in Wisconsin and elsewhere doesn't mean that public sector unions are done. It just means that the way in which representation goes on is going to change. Because I think, as we've discovered over 100 years, you can get rid of it one way, it comes back a different way, because of just of the nature of work. I think that what we're going to see here, obviously, is a shifting of resources by the unions and people who support them to much more activity in the workplace, which was, taken a second place to the mobilization on the recall. But if you're at work and you have a job posting system or don't have a job posting system, and anybody gets jobs, and, you know, they may not be the most qualified, they may not be the most senior, you're going to have an increasingly restive workforce. If you have a system where there is no definable redress for any problem of any sort, no arbitration, no nothing, not everybody is fair and wonderful at the workplace. These things are going to happen. And that is why you wind up having representation. So I don't think that just because the law changes at this point in this way that public sector unions are finished. Remember, they were illegal for most of the 20th century, and they flourished.
What about any concerns that that private unions are in trouble with the right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin? The governor insists that he is not interested in pursuing such legislation. Are you concerned at all?
Sure, but I'm not concerned from the point of view of whether he is going to pursue right-to-work legislation. I think the overall agenda of the Republican Party and their supporters, and some others, in fact, is that to have a whole series of legislation, and right to work is just one part of it. It has nothing to really do with the rights or the workers, but in any event, to weaken private and public sector unions. Private sector unions are down to about 8 or 10% of the workforce at this point, down from 30%. So clearly, they're in trouble. The right to work in Wisconsin, will probably, if it ever passed, would weaken unions further. But I think that that legislation says that the union is still responsible for negotiating all of the different benefits and wages and everything else, and the people who aren't paying, you know, get the benefit. But that's simply unfair. But whether that passes or not, what we're seeing in negotiations with companies, we saw this in Manitowoc, and we're seeing it in a company up in Superior now, the management is coming to the union, reaching economic settlements, just as happened in the state, and then demanding changes in the contract that effectively put in what amounts to right-to-work type regulations, and then threatening to move or forcing the people out on strike or whatever if they don't agree to these political demands. So what I think we're seeing is sort of that type of structure, legal structure, being put in place by other means. And the right-to-work legislation as legislation is therefore not really the threat that we're seeing to unions in the private sector at this moment.
Frank Emspach is our guest, managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News. We're talking with him about what the recall election results mean for the future of unions in Wisconsin and in politics in Wisconsin and beyond. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be partly to mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in northern Wisconsin, especially the northwest. Highs today will be in the 70s and 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, June the 8th. Coming up after 8, it's a special recall edition of The Week in Review. We'll welcome in Matt Rothschild and Owen Robinson to talk with you about all of the recall election-related news of the week. That's coming up after 8. Coming up this afternoon, after 4, it's At Issue with Ben Marins and your views on the news. You're invited to call in with your thoughts about the week's most significant news story. Your views on the news every Friday after 4. Right now, we are talking about the effect of the recall on labor in Wisconsin and nationwide. Our guest is Frank Emspach, who is managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News. And our first caller is Katie in Clinton. Hello, Katie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Good yes. morning.
Go ahead, Katie. What is it that you'd like to ask or say?
Basically, my opinion of the unions is that they've reached a point now where they've outlived their usefulness. The pendulum is starting to swing the other way now. I came from the state of Pennsylvania, where I saw what the steel unions out there did and saw towns literally just dry up and blow away kind of thing when the unions basically came in with the iron fist. Here, I've worked in open and closed shops. I have relatives that are teachers that one of the things they really didn't like was having the dues automatically taken out, especially when it was paying for something that they didn't agree with. What I think is happening is, and it's not just here in Wisconsin, it's all across the country, the pendulum is starting to swing the other way now, and they've basically reached a point where the unions have outlived their usefulness.
Now, what do you say to that, Frank Emspach?
Well, I think what the caller is saying is accurate in the sense that some people don't like to pay for things they don't believe in. There's no question about that. But I think when we talk about usefulness, the question is, what are unions supposed to do? They're supposed to act in ways to increase the standard of living of working people. The companies make decisions to move the plants overseas, which they've done in the steel industry, and they've also make the decision fundamentally whether the productivity increases, that's the wealth that's being created, is going to be shared. Now, the wealth in this country has declined. The wealth has increased, but the proportion of the working people has declined in the exact proportion that unions have declined. So it seems to me that the problem isn't so much that unions have outlived their usefulness, is that unions and working people haven't figured out how to capture the wealth that they've been creating. You've had a huge increase in wealth, but it's going to the 1%. And the kind of stuff that unions used to be able to accomplish through collective bargaining, namely a transference of wealth, that's what it's all about, your wages are raised or you get health care, they have not been successful at that in the last generation. But I don't think it's because usefulness is in question here. You need it to raise wages. But you have to talk about effectiveness and whether the unions, under the current legal structure, can in fact do what they have to do. I only say this because historically, in our country, when we didn't have unions and had these tremendous disparities in wealth, which are now more than they are this year than they were in 1929, the net result of having no system was continuing social and political unrest. I don't think that is the solution here. So if we're going to say that unions are not useful, what is going to go, and how in our society are we going to deal with the fact that wealth is being removed, factories are going away, and so on. What is the counterweight? And I think that's the problem with the usefulness argument. Now, whether people are effective, or whether you can be effective if you are in a local union and you're part of a multinational company, and this is what's happening in this country. For instance, Burns Harbor, the steel mill in Indiana, is paired in competition with one in Belgium. They're owned by the same company. Well, right now the Belgians are getting paid more than the people in Burns Harbor, but clearly people feel under the gun, and how does the union deal with that kind of international situation? That's not a question of usefulness. That's a question of being effective.
Yeah, I saw a number of Facebook posts about union dues going to pay for things that people don't approve of, like a political activity. And our caller made mention of that, too. Is that
illegal? You can't do it.
Right. I mean, unions aren't allowed to do that without permission?
Well, they're not allowed to use union dues at all, really, in quite that way. Now, the Citizens United decision may change some of that. It's not clear. But in terms of the way unions function, almost all unions have what they call a political action committee. And those funds are segregated from your normal dues. And so that when you pay your dues, which are specifically for the purposes of contract negotiation, staff salaries, and so on and so forth, that's one thing. And if you want to have the union contribute to a political campaign, that is through their political education funds, which are segregated, are voluntary, and a lot of people have arguments about, you know, who should get what and whether the PAC money should go to this or that candidate. But in the federal law, they're still separate. I cannot take a dollar from from somebody who says I'm paying you to be, you know, my representative, and take that dollar and then spend it on a political campaign.
Our next caller is Joy in Eagle. Hello, Joy.
Hi, Joy and Frank. I am an organizer with the Communications Workers of America, and I think one of the things, I was very happy to hear the last comment by Frank. I've heard it over and over again of the callers espousing that union dues go for political action, and I was very glad that you set that straight. I wish all the commentators on public radio would do that when that question is raised in the discourse. But what I mainly called about is I don't believe that unions are losing favor or irrelevant. I think part of the problem is that the labor laws are very much stilted towards allowing employers to do whatever they can to prohibit their workers from making their own decision. You had a caller on one of your programs yesterday who said he was an employer, small business employer, I believe he said, spent $100,000 to stop his workers from, on terms of propaganda, to stop his workers from going union. If unions are so bad and so irrelevant, why do employers spend hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars every year to try to coerce their employees that unions are bad? Why don't they just let them vote? I'm currently working with American Airlines passenger service agents, which are 10,000 of them across the country. And the CEO, Tom Horton, refused to turn over the mailing labels after we were certified for an election. Refused, basically thumbing his nose at federal law and also trying to rewrite legislation in the fact that the rules under for the National Mediation Board and the Railway Labor Act have been changed as of February. Our election was certified in December, but he believes that it should be retroactive. Those are the issues. Those are the things that are coming out and that are working against workers in this country. There are so many backlog cases that the National Labor Relations Board have not ruled on, and workers still do get fired.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Joy. A react to that, Frank?
Well, it goes to this: 1 in 5 workers involved in organizing campaigns are fired, and about a year later, maybe 2 years later, some of them may get their jobs back, and they may get paid the difference between what they would have earned and what they were able to earn on the outside. The consequence of that usually is to wreck the union campaign. No other social group in the country faces this kind of legal discrimination if they want to organize somebody. So I think that we need to understand that in this country, the strictures on unions are already great, and the penalty for an employer is very, very small, and because of the dysfunctionality of the National Labor Relations Board, the enforcement agency, often don't happen. Let me just give you an example, because we often talk about other places, and we talk about Germany as a success story in many cases. They earn more, and it's more stable. You know, you have all kinds of things there. If you're in a factory there and you want to vote for the union, you vote for the union. There's none of this campaigning and millions of dollars spent. It's illegal to do that kind of prevention of democracy. And I think if we take a look at it, if people could just vote and say, all right, I want it, I don't want it, or the employer, under the law, you know, the employer can voluntarily recognize people. And how's that done? If he agrees to a vote or she agrees to a vote, or by petition. Well, this is something that would take the venom out of it if the employer was willing. From my point of view now, we're a small business too, you know, and our people are unionized. I find it easier as a small business person to have some kind of structure to deal with wages and how we're going to promote people than not. And, you know, I think a lot of people would find the same way, but it's a question of fairness. It's a question of equality, and it's a question of democracy in our own workplace, in our country. And I think that's what the caller was talking about. Why wouldn't you want people to vote?
Let me hold you there, because we have news coming up next, and then we'll continue talking with Frank Emspach, managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News. Organized labor made a big effort in the recall campaign against Governor Walker, but came up short, and we're talking what that means for the future of labor in Wisconsin and beyond. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a labor expert about what the recall election results mean for labor unions and issues affecting workers, not just here in Wisconsin, but nationwide. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Wednesday, June the 8th. It's not Wednesday, it's Friday. What's going on here? If you have a question or a comment, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do the recall election results mean for the future of unions? Our guest is Frank Emspach. He is managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News. He is also an emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. And Frank Emspach, what does this say about the future of unions?
I don't think it says so much about the future of unions as the future for politics in the state of Wisconsin and the future that unions will play in those politics. I say that because throughout the country, this is not a good thing, but public sector unions are under attack in many, many cities and states and municipalities or whatever. So in Ohio, you had an attempt to have what amounts to a right to work legislation on the ballot. That was an elimination of all kinds of collective bargaining, somewhat like Wisconsin. And that was defeated by a referendum of people. In Indiana, the legislature passed restrictive legislation. So I think you're seeing a nationwide assault, and I think it's there's no hidden agenda here. The National Chamber of Commerce and others have said, look, we want to get rid of the public sector unions because they help finance the Democrats. This is a political deal, and we're going to do that. It had nothing to do with the workplace, democracy, budgets, or anything else. It had to do with the political agenda. Well, that's playing out in Wisconsin. So unions are restricted here, not quite as much as Mississippi, where they're not allowed, or North Carolina, where public sector unions are illegal and incidentally in violation of the International Labor Organization, the United Nations, but still restricted. So what happens? If people are going to have any kind of sense of democracy at the workplace, unions are going to have to find ways to reorganize. And I believe that could be, that's obviously in the wings, and it's obviously going to be a healthy thing if we as union members, and I say that as a person who used to be a union leader, as a president of a local, required to go talk to everybody and convince them to join, and there's a good reason to do so, that kind of activity at the workplace can be very, very healthy. And it also can be unsettling because all kinds of issues may come to the surface that are not there right now. We had in Wisconsin a very legalistic system. Arbitrations, hearings, this, that, and the other thing. That's gone. Well, something is going to have to replace that. Either you're going to have continuous problems and upheavals, as you did prior to the acceptance of collective bargaining and education in Wisconsin, or you're going to have festering problems in the workplace, or both, with no system. And so what's going to happen in Wisconsin is going to be, I think, a long and probably painful rebirth of some kind of collective bargaining system in the public sector. In the private sector, my guess is that there are people's standard of living is falling. Now, we can either deal with that by going after somebody else, as Governor Walker has done. You know, these people are living off your taxes. They shouldn't have that. You don't. Or people are going to come together and say, you know what? This is a wealthy country. We're making money in this company. They don't have the right, even though legally they do, but they should not have the right to take this job to Mexico to make even more money and impoverish our community. If people say those things and do those things, we'll have a rebirth. If they don't, I think we're going to have a continuing fall in our standard of living. If laws support undermining our standard of living, I think that eventually people will say enough is enough. There's no reason, from a political point of view or a leadership point of view, for our country to have a falling standard of living at a time that more wealth is being created. And I think the Democrats and Republicans need to address that directly, not just with tax cuts to millionaires as so-called job creators, which it hasn't done, but really take a look at this stuff. That's the context in which the unions function as minor players. No union has as much money as any of the major corporations in the United States. And it's just not even in the scale.
Let me share a comment from Jared on Facebook. If labor unions want to survive, they need to stop relying so much on the Democrats. The Dems showed during the recall that they'll only back the unions if it's politically savvy to do so.
That's probably true. The unions started in this country in a big way in the 1930s in the private sector by organizing themselves. The Roosevelt administration at the time came on afterwards, and these laws were passed as an attempt to, you know, put things in a system, the ones that we have. The civil rights movement is the same way. They started and maintained their power as a social movement focused on their people and the people they were working with. And they proceeded along the line saying, we want voting rights, we want this, we want that, their own agenda. And finally, President Johnson, to his credit, and others said, okay, you know, we'll buy into it. But it didn't start with the Democratic Party, and it didn't end with the Democratic Party, to the extent that working people, and your other caller alluded to this in the sense of, that money is being used in a way people didn't want. I think that was a political comment. If the labor movement is truly independent, okay, and builds on the needs of the people, the Democrats will either respond to it or they won't. But the labor movement cannot be an appendage of the Democratic Party. And to the extent that it's either doing that or perceived that way, I think it's weakened.
Let's go to Gary in Fremont. Hi, Gary. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I guess I'm just constantly floored at the cherry-picking of facts and analogies here, comparing very small, closed countries in Europe and their tight immigration with the U.S. market. I mean, I really would like to see somebody, this guy seems to be just a flat-out socialist. I really would like to see another person on also that would have more of a free market approach, so we can actually have a discussion and debate rather than...
Well, why don't you present a point that our guests can address and we can have a discussion or a debate?
Got it. The blurring of the monopolistic positions that public sector unions have with private sectors and even the civil, comparing it to civil rights, is just absurd as far as the two positions. And that is why FDR was against public sector unions having, or the public employees having the having their unions, because of the monopolistic position. The consumers do not have a free choice in whether or not we consume their products. We have to, and so therefore it's all very tightly controlled, and there's no choice, just as in card check.
So Gary, you want especially public sector unions to go away?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but not every state has public sector unions, and Wisconsin didn't even get theirs till, I think, 1959. And I don't see that there was a bad world before that happened.
All right, so this caller doesn't think public sector unions should be there, and FDR didn't think they should be there either. Frank Emspeck, we're talking about the impact of the election on unions. Do you think?
Well, I think that it's not quite the same. It's not apples and oranges here. It's one thing. This caller is absolutely right. That some states say that for state workers or municipal workers, this is what they can control, shouldn't have public sector unions. So Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, you know, other leaders in our country, I say that sarcastically, don't have legislation for public sector unions. However, public sector workers have found ways to unionize, and they do that the same way public sector workers did in this state until 1959 or 1960, or teachers did until the 70s. They formed unions, they got together, they went to their employer, and they tried to bargain something, and sometimes the employers did it, and sometimes they didn't. The law, what the law does is it certifies you as a bargaining agent, and then the state or the whatever the agency is says to the employer, listen, you know, they did everything legally, you got to talk to these people. In the absence of a law, which is what the caller wanted, that doesn't mean that you don't have freedom of association in this country. You still have that in the Constitution, and people in workplaces find ways to get together. It's just more harmful, more difficult to do so. But it has never, the absence of legislation has never prevented unionization in this country. And it's made it more difficult. It's made it more violent. It's made it more serious for people. But it's not prevented it because people need a way to democratically come together and express themselves. So I think the question is, how do you do this in a way that's most useful for society? This notion of public sector monopolization, I don't think makes much sense. The last time we had choice in a big way in fire protection, and this is usually the reason we have public services, is because these things happen to us already. And we had choice in many, many fire protection systems in this country in the 1830s and 1840s, and one result was that part of Chicago burned down, and another one was New York. So what happened was, as a result of seeing some of these things, far-sighted civic leaders said, you know, this isn't a good idea. So we have public services. And then the workers working for them said, right, well, we should have some voice in this too. So I don't think that this necessarily is a bad thing, but clearly the absence of laws does not prevent unionization. It just makes it more difficult for everybody.
We are talking with Frank Emspeck. He is managing editor, executive producer of Workers Independent News. He is also an emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. We're talking about the effect of the recall election on labor in Wisconsin, public and private. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, partly to mostly cloudy, a chance of rain in the north, especially in the northwest. Highs will be in the 70s and 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 10 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, June 8th. Coming up after 8, it's our Friday Week in Review. We'll talk with Matt Rothschild and Owen Robinson about the news of the week. It'll be a special recall election edition of the Week in Review coming up after 8. We're talking about labor and the future of labor and the future of the political power of labor. Following the recall election in Wisconsin, we are talking with Frank Emspach, who is a emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. Bernie in Elkhorn is with us now. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. I agree with everything that you've said. And I wanted to mention real quick, I read an article by Ralph Nader in the Progressive Populist recently where he talked about one major union, and I apologize for being uncertain. I think it was the AFL-CIO. At the national level, not really gone to bat for its membership as it should, and wanted to make the point that the major issue of job loss due to NAFTA and the free trade agreements, I think there's a real problem because you've got a Democrat like Barack Obama who supports these free trade agreements and NAFTA and the WTO, and you've got all the Republicans who, of course, support them. And I think labor, as the earlier person gave input, is making a huge strategic mistake by always backing the Democrats. I agree the Republicans should never be supported, but there's no reason to unconditionally give money to people like Barack Obama who are not advancing your agenda. There's absolutely no pressure being put on him, and I really think labor needs to invest heavily into trying to promote instant runoff voting, because until there's a third party that's viable at the national level, you're just going, you know, we're all going, as far as working people, absolutely to the bottom in this country.
And do you think that's where the priority should be, Frank Emspach?
Well, I think that labor needs to have a very clear voice for its own interest, and I believe its own interests are broad. And I say that when we look at Wisconsin, we look at the paper industry, we look at the plant closings and so forth because of coated paper imports and among many, many other things. And I think that we have to really, as working people, I say we as all of us, have to say, what are our interests? And put those interests forward in the most broad way and cooperative way, cooperative with other portions of the society that's possible. And that will force the change in the political process. If we don't do that, I think we'll continue to be in trouble and we'll have choices that we don't like. Let me just say one other thing about the public sector in the recall in the state, because that's where we were started this morning. If we think that the education system has advocates, and I think we all understand that the Wisconsin Education Association Council is an advocate for public education, not just teachers, and they lose 80% of their dues or 60% of their dues and three-quarters of their membership due to this Act 10, how does that affect public education? Sure, the local school committee might be able to not raise wages, but the state budget may also be amended in such a way that state aid is cut. And our basic, most fundamental, positive thing in Wisconsin, which has been K-12 education, gets undermined in part because one of the major advocates for public education is crippled. This isn't some scenario. You have a lot of people say, cripple the unions, we cripple the Democrats, we cripple the people that are supporting this, that, or the other thing we don't like. As Wisconsinites, we have to say, where's the balance? And you need advocates for public education. You need advocates for public transit so that people can go to work. You need advocates for a kind of higher education system that doesn't continually ratchet up costs and eliminate the future for thousands of our young people. And so far in this country, in this century and in the last, it's been the unions who have taken that standard. So if we weaken them and undo them or destroy them or whatever, who is going to carry that banner forward? Maybe somebody else will show up, but so far for the last 100 or so years, it's been unions with all of their faults that have carried those banners of public education, access to higher education, access to medical care forward, in spite of all the problems and the fundamental issue that the last caller raised. If you depend on one party, can you do it? Probably not.
Let me ask you about, before we run out of time, let me also ask you about something that happened in California. Voters in two cities in California, San Diego and San Jose, overwhelmingly supported cutting the pensions of city government workers in order to save money.
Right.
Is this going to be a trend?
Sure, if you can do it and the pensions are not funded properly. But Wisconsin has one of the most well-funded, well-managed, wealthy pension organizations in the world. All right? It has been a tremendous success. Why would you want to fool around with that? I mean, you'd be crazy to impoverish a generation of older people who've given their support to their work. I mean, this is loony. It's not going to work to impoverish one group by saying, well, we won't impoverish you as much. We cannot continue down what amounts to a zero-sum game. And I think you're going to find in San Jose and San Diego, which are both wealthy cities. I mean, look, San Jose, what are we talking about? The center of the so-called innovation of our you know, software industry and so forth. These are wealthy, wealthy companies that are there. How could they be out of cash, you know? So I think if these go on, you're going to have, again, a revolt of the older people. We didn't get Social Security because people gave it to somebody. We got Social Security because people in their 60s, we're talking about 1929 now, were in the street saying, we're starving to death. Okay, I don't think we want to go back there in spite of San Jose or San Diego.
Let's take another call from Al in Milwaukee. Hello, Al.
Hey. Hello.
Yes, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that the election and the consequence of the election will be to further destroy the idea that a collection of workers, their human rights, will not be considered equal to a collection of capital and the owners of that capital.
Yeah, so you think this is bad news for unions all around, Al?
I think it's bad news for human beings, yeah. Because every worker is involved in some relationship with management, and I think that we've chipped away. I would like to hear whether or not there's a possibility of enshrining, say, in the Constitution, the absolute right of workers to bargain equally with the owners of capital.
Well, Frank Emsbach.
I don't hear any movement to that effect. I think what you're going to see is attempts to strengthen the notions of freedom of association, which is in the Constitution. And clearly, in terms of the political process, you're going to see an attempt to try to get money out of politics again and make it so there's a more level playing field. One of the consequences of the Wisconsin recall election, to get back to that, probably has been a referendum on the effectiveness of Citizens United. It is unlimited money being dumped into a campaign. Can you buy it? And I think it's pretty clear, $120 million, I mean, this is ridiculous. And it's pretty clear that you can buy elections now. And I think that that is really where we're at in terms of all these things. And the biggest impact of the recall is going to be an evaluation of that Citizens United. The unions clearly are weakened. Clearly it's not a good thing for unions in Wisconsin. It's part of a national trend. And again, at the level of the workplace, workers are going to figure out how to get together to accomplish the ends that they need to get through the day. And that has happened with or without legislation. It's just a lot harder, more difficult, and much more disruptive when it's without any kind of structure. Well, that's the direction that we're going in with the current law. Hopefully, people will say, you know, that's not what we really wanted here. We'll see.
We'll see. Thank you very much for being with us. Frank Emsbach, managing editor and executive producer of Workers Independent News, is also emeritus professor at the UW Extension School for Workers. Thanks very much to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Naya Mukherjee for producing this program. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. It's a recall edition of The Week in Review after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.